Okay, welcome back. Episode 8. Moving right along. Today we have a special guest, Tony A, the Wizard, joins us, steps inside the horror quarters. How you doing, man?
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Right.
I'm
right.
Blessed to be here, brother.
Appreciate you coming through, man. How'd you get that name, the Wizard, anyway? Curious.
Years ago, I want to say like in 1988, back in the days, people had certain like DJ names. Mine was just Tony A. It was just kind of a boring name. And my manager at that time, Steve, told me, you need something exciting or something that somebody could know you as. There was a guy named Dr. Scratch. There was a guy named Magic Mike. So he wanted something like that for me. So one day he calls me up and he tells me, TT Wizard. And I go, what the hell is that? And he goes, the Turntable Wizard. He said, because you're real quick on the turntables.
Okay.
And I said, okay, Steve, we'll roll with that. And
it stuck.
I don't mind it, but I keep it for I keep it because that's what people know me by.
Okay. Well, Tony heard about the podcast here through Vince, through Brian, and got in touch. That's how it all came about, man. I appreciate you coming way out here from Wilmington just to be a part of this.
I appreciate you having me, man. You know, when I saw some of your episodes and I saw your collection of masks and what you have and what you guys talk about, that was like right up my alley, because everybody thinks that everything I do is just hip hop, you know, but there's a lot of film in me that was instilled in me by my dad as a kid.
Okay. And Halloween was one of those, right?
Growing up, Halloween was my favorite holiday. It was weird because in elementary, my mother dressed me up like the devil 3 years in a row. I don't know if that was a hint.
Right.
You know, third grade, fourth grade, and fifth grade, I was the devil. And we always had homemade costumes. So homemade costumes were the best. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Those are some of the scariest ones. You can see like some of the older pictures that you'll see online of these makeshift costumes that these kids were wearing. And they're scarier than most of the costumes now.
Yeah.
They'll be... I don't know, they have like potato sacks over their head with eyes cut out, but just the way it looks, black and white pictures, they're actually the freakiest. But anyway, so tell me about your memories of Halloween, 1978 version.
Well, I remember I was about 10 years old, and my mom dropped us off at a theater in the city of Carson, California. And it was called Carson Twin Cinema. And me and my younger brother, who was at that time, he was about 8 years old. They dropped us off, and we get to watch two movies. You know, it had two theaters in it. Each theater contained two movies. And I wanted to see Halloween because Halloween had always been my favorite holiday. I mean, it's funny because I still remember the smell, and I still love the smell of carving out a pumpkin, lighting the candle, closing it, and watching the candle burn the bottom of the lid, if you will. I love that smell.
Okay.
So when I saw that there was a movie called Halloween, mm-hmm. I went to go see it, and that's what that started with, like a jack-o'-lantern. And I was like, oh, hell yeah.
Right.
So, but I would say that the dope scene was when the little boy, Michael Myers, walks upstairs, kills his sister. And I thought that was pretty, like, wild, freaky.
Yeah.
That he actually killed his sister. They take off the mask, but then years later, you know, he puts on another mask. And just to me, that mask was just brilliant. I mean, I don't know if it was scary, mysterious, or what, but just his movements, the way almost robotic, the way he would just like just turn to the side, everything about it was awesome. For a 10-year-old, it was amazing.
And the mask, that's something I've touched on plenty of times. The mask, it's like a good friend of mine said, it's like being killed by nothing.
Yeah.
So the look on its face, there is no smiling, frowning, there's nothing. The same way you see him coming at you is the same way he's going to leave when your body drops. And
yes,
there's something about that that's just extremely evil. You know what I'm saying?
I remember one of the scariest scenes for me, and it may not be as much scary as to other people, but I remember when she was in her classroom, okay, and she looks outside and he's standing out there staring at her, Michael Myers. And then she looks back at her teacher, she looks back and he's gone.
Right.
I thought, what the hell?
Yep.
And then they're walking down the street, and he pulls up with the station wagon.
Yeah.
And they yell something, hey, creep.
Yeah.
And he slams on the brakes. I'm like, oh, no, please, please don't reverse. And I'm a 10-year-old pleading with this movie, please don't put it in reverse. But it was a brilliant movie. It was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, those scenes that you're talking about, those two scenes, the classroom scene and the station wagon scene, I think because it was still, it was in the daytime.
Yes.
And yet you're, so it wasn't only night you're afraid of, right? This cat comes out in the daytime and it's just as scary, you know? And yes. I was young. I was four when that came out, but I didn't see the movie probably till I was 10. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And that scared me. Less is more. I mean, you don't know if he's there, if he's not there. And then the music, once the music kicks in, something's about to go down, and that always frightened me, man, you know. But I've always been, he's always been my favorite out of all the killers and movie killers and stuff. Michael was always the one that frightened me the most, you know.
Well, I would have to say the same thing for me. The same thing for me, like out of Jason, out of Freddy Krueger, I would have to say that Michael Myers was always my favorite. Actually, every Halloween, ever since then, I had always been Michael Myers. I had pictures, like 20-year-old pictures of me still in a Michael Myers mask with the suit and the boots, et cetera. So, yes, that's definitely. And I think that's what kind of encouraged me to reach out, because I love this stuff, you know. And I would see you interview certain people, and I would see the mask, and I was like, dude, I feel like I'm at home.
Right.
You know, even going to Halloween stores as a kid,
it
just felt amazing. I mean, I remember at times always telling my mother, I wish it was Halloween year-round.
Yeah.
Because I always loved that time of the year.
I wonder why that is. Why the love for horror stuff? And I mean, even for myself, I don't know.
Well, I think for me, and I say I think, maybe it was in me, because nobody else in my family is kind of like me when it comes to scary movies other than my father. And as I was sharing with you earlier, that my father, as a young boy, introduced me to a lot of black and white scary movies. I remember one of the first black and white movies that he actually ever played for me was on his projector. He had a reel-to-reel projector, and we would put a like a bed sheet on the garage door and put bed sheets on the floor outside, and the projector would hit the garage door. Mm-hmm. So we had like our big screen. He would make popcorn. He would make homemade caramel and put it on the popcorn. We out there at night. We watched, it was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. That one had Bela Lugosi, and it had Boris Karloff, Lon Chaney, you know, which were Dracula, the werewolf, you know, et cetera, the black and white movies. So he did a lot of that. And it wasn't never like he ever sat me down and talked to me about it, but I just saw him always with involved with film. And he had a brother that I only met once, which was my uncle, named Oscar Alvarez. And he actually worked on the set of The Exorcist.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh. So when I was a kid, he would always tell me, there's a movie coming out called The Exorcist. So, you know, I was 5 years old, and we go see The Exorcist, you know, and that terrified the hell out of me.
Yeah.
You know, a five-year-old really had no business watching, you know, The Exorcist. You know, it's funny because I grew up going to swamp meets at night, driving theaters.
Right.
And we go see The Exorcist, and I'm in between my mother's legs on the floor of the station wagon while the speaker's blasting on the window. And as a kid, I'm hearing, your mother sucks cocks in hell.
Right, you know? Right.
You know, and I think stuff like that really, really traumatized me. So I kind of like the stuff better that my dad introduced me to. It was a little bit more safer.
Yeah.
I loved the Dracula, God, I forgot, Bela Lugosi.
Okay. When you first came in here, I noticed you pointed out the Warlock mask.
Yes.
That's from the second one, which I think it's a close, they're close. I mean, most people pick the first one over the second one, but what do you think?
I like this one. I remember when I first saw it online, and I thought that was dope, but I didn't know how to go about it because the guy that was showing it wasn't selling it. And then I happened to see it on your page.
Yeah.
And I thought, what the hell? I got to see that.
Yeah.
You know, because I collect masks, and I have about, well, at one point I had about 40 masks. Now I have about 20. I sold a couple of them, and I should have never had. I had a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, some Freddy Kruegers, and I had a couple of Michael Myers, but this one I've actually never had, you know.
Okay.
Mine was a little bit more like this one down here.
Okay.
But I love this one.
What did you think of the movie, the second one,
in the hospital? Part two?
Yeah.
I thought it picked up right where it left off. You know, it was funny because as a kid, you know it's a continuance, and though it was still somewhat scary, the only disappointing part that I thought of the whole movie, which I thought did not fit, was at the very end when they play Mr. Sandman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just thought to myself, like, how does that fit into this.
Yeah, I'm glad they played that at the end at least, because I think if they would have played that any earlier, it would have really ruined it, right?
So, right.
Yeah, I agree. That didn't really fit. And that kind of was a song they used in other ones past the second one. But I wasn't a huge fan of that,
right?
You know, but the second one to me was I don't know. I mean, they showed a lot more gore, but I'd say it was close to the first one.
You know what I mean? I still say that the best ones are the one and two.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's one night, you know, now that I get older, I always think to myself, damn, that was a long-ass night.
Right. It was a long night.
But it was still dope. I enjoyed it.
They shot that 3 years later, and then they put a wig on Jamie Lee, kind of like a not-too-good-looking wig. But that's what she was rocking pretty much the whole movie. And that one there, I think they shot it in an abandoned hospital. I think they found somewhere down in Pasadena.
Okay.
And they were having problems with the sound because of the airplanes that were...
Oh, okay.
Just,
okay.
You know, the scheduling of the airplanes. But I thought that was solid, you know. The ones past that, like 4, 5, 6, man, I couldn't really get into them, man.
Well, let me say this. First of all, growing up, I always wanted to go to Haddonfield, Illinois.
Yeah.
I truly, truly believe that that's where they filmed it, you know, because... You're thinking that's what they're telling us.
Yeah.
As a kid, so I'm thinking, when I get older, I'm going to get some money, and I'm going to go see the Michael Myers house. It's probably still abandoned the way it is in the movie.
Right.
That's what I was thinking. I'm going to go to Jamie Lee Curtis. And then, as I get older, I think to myself, no, I find that it's in Pasadena.
Right.
And I'll be honest with you, I was kind of really, really bummed about that, because I really wanted to go to Haddonfield. I really thought that place, the little house really existed there.
Yeah.
Okay. But now moving on to 3, 4, 5, and the 3 was horrible.
Right.
I don't even know why they, at least in my opinion, why they even considered it a part of the Halloween collection, if you will.
Yeah.
And then the other ones, the one I didn't bother watching, and I kind of just like, I rented it. That's what I did. The one that came out with Busta Rhymes.
Yeah,
and,
that was 8.
You know, and I was thinking to myself, like, okay, now this is a spoof. This is a joke, you know.
Yeah.
So when I found out they were making this new one, I was ready for that one.
What'd you think? The new one?
Now, I seen your last episode, okay, about that one.
Right.
I'm going to say this. I liked it, and I'm going to tell you why I liked it. Because I just wanted to see Jamie Lee Curtis one more time. And it's kind of like The Force Awakens. The music that they used was almost similar to Star Wars, you know, that came out in the 70s. And I thought, man, that gave me that feel.
Right.
I thought this one, just by having her back, would give me that feel. And then this new doctor, I forget his name, he reminded me so much of...
Sartain, yeah.
Yes, of Dr. Loomis, okay? Mm-hmm. I thought the voice were kind of somewhat similar. I was glad to see Michael Myers without a mask. I mean, I was dying... for the camera to kind of go to his face.
Okay.
You know, it kind of tripped me out that the guy was yelling at Michael holding the mask. I thought, I didn't really care too much for that part, but at least that we got to see Michael without a mask. So there was a lot of good and bad out of it, but overall, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, I've shredded it over and over, but it's part of the family now, you know, so... I watch it quite a bit, you know. It's kind of like a pair of shoes that I don't like as much as maybe another pair of shoes.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'll still rock them,
right?
You know.
Right.
But I had my issues with it. I'm excited to see what they're gonna do with the next one. You know, I guess they're gonna do another one. And,
Now I had a question for you.
Yeah.
Was do you believe that there is a next one? And and do you believe that it's possibly going to be the girl, or Michael got out?
I believe that Michael got out just because of at least with the edit, when they cut back to the fire where he was standing, he's gone. What I would probably do if I was writing it or brainstorming about what can we do to get Michael out of there?
Yeah.
It was an old structure she lived in, right? Maybe the fire broke a hole in the wall or something caved in. Maybe that's how he got out. I mean, they can come up with, you know, some different things. I hope it's not the girl.
I hope not either. I hope not either, because we've seen some where it's the girl.
And, yeah.
What I was thinking, because at the very end of the movie, when the girl runs to the truck and the truck stops, they never show the driver.
That's a good point.
They never show the driver. So they take off the knives in the back. So I pointed out to a couple of my buddies that we kind of like watched it all together. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, they never show the driver. It could have been him, and she never seen him without the mask.
Wow. I never thought about that.
Yeah, so
they never show the driver, and I was, you know, I was wondering, why is she running away from the house anyway? Why is she jumping in the back of the truck? Now, if they went there, that'd be very interesting.
Yeah.
Because he can drive. Yeah. I mean, we've seen him drive, right? So, wow.
And she's never seen him without the mask. That mask could have burnt off or something.
Sure.
And then he has his own knife in the back.
Right.
So.
That could be, yeah, that could be it. I mean, because they've done stranger things. Like, at the end of 7, that led you to the Busta Rhymes one. Remember, they changed the whole ending where it was the ambulance driver with the mask, and she cut off the wrong head.
Right.
So, it's Hollywood, right? They can come up with anything, man. So, nice shirt, by the way, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I had this done specifically for this show.
For this show?
For the, wow. Jason and Michael Myers, because I'm a huge Michael Myers fan.
Wow, man.
I don't know if you guys can see it, but here you go right here.
Wow, so. Just for the show. Man, that's incredible, man. You know, Jason was always, he was fun, you know? He didn't scare me like Michael. But, you know, I've invested in all those, you know? What about you?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I have to say this, that I watched the first Jason movie, and I became a fan. Because I like these guys with masks, okay?
Yeah.
But as I, throughout the years, and I continue to see him, I'm like, all right, already, you know? But I still like it because it was horror.
Right.
You know? But it's funny because if you watch stuff like some Michael Myers, some Jason, some Freddy Krueger, it always seems like they all get killed while they're boning.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was funny. I shared that with a friend of mine, and one of my friends tells me, well, I'm good because I haven't gotten laid in over 5 years.
Yeah, so he's fine.
Yeah, he's fine.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So I understand you're trying to put together a horror project yourself.
Yes.
Okay. Well, first, what movies kind of inspired you? Did Halloween inspire you to do something like that? Or
well, Halloween was definitely an inspiration for me to go to the next level because I've done a documentary. I filmed certain music videos. But I really want to do a scary movie. I'll tell you why. I look at movies like, let's just say Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, you know, the Jason movies. I Know What You Did Last Summer, Screams. And they're like in white suburbia. And I want to do a movie where it is in the hood, you know, where there's blacks and Mexicans there. And I want to base it around the 80s because I just love the 80s, okay? But to answer your question, some of the movies that inspired me definitely growing up was a movie called Salem's Lot.
Oh, man.
Okay? A movie called Fright Night.
Mm-hmm.
Fright Night, Phantasm.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely Michael Myers and of course The Exorcist, you know, but I would say one of them was probably Salem's Lot. That one really inspired me because they used a vampire or a Dracula, if you will, that favored a lot of Nosferatu.
Yeah, it was very inspiring.
And even the color, and I'm thinking to myself, man, I want to bring some of that back, you know, because as being a hip-hop producer, I was a DJ and a hip-hop producer. A hip-hop producer, when music first started, we would take little samples, a snare, a kick, a hat, and we would combine it to make one song. And sometimes, I mean, that's how, like, NWA projects came. Were all samples.
Right.
And the way my mind thinks was, take little, tiny little samples from all your favorite movies that inspired you.
Yeah.
And put them into one. And that's what I want to do. I want people to say, wow, that looks familiar. I don't know where it's from. Oh, that was dope. I've seen that somewhat before. That was original. And in the time of the 80s, make it a little bit different. And actually, I want to base it in the city of Inglewood because I love the housing over there. But it's got to be definitely in the 80s.
Well, let me ask you. So it wouldn't necessarily be a spoof. It would be just horror in this neighborhood now, right? So,
yes.
And so what do you think what are you reaching for? Is it going to be a different type of a different way that people are going to fight this guy? Is it to be a different behavior, you know, towards this cat, you know?
Most definitely. Because in this neighborhood, the way I have it pictured, we have blacks and Latinos living in the same neighborhood.
Right.
In the 80s, you know, around these nice old looking dope houses.
So this horror movie, I'm very interested in, because you're right. A lot of it takes place in the same type of neighborhoods. Do you think this killer would be successful in this neighborhood?
Oh, I truly do believe that it would be successful because, you know, and, you know, a lot of times we see scary movies where it's just noise. Like somebody would just turn around and they'll hear a thump.
Right.
And that scares people. This is going to be a little bit different. It's kind of like Michael Myers, like what we talked about earlier, during the day, you know, this guy drives around, this guy walks around, he could just be standing somewhere. Yeah. It's going to be that type of scary, if you will, where it's just not going to be, but this guy's literally going to move like a person, you know, like an actual person. He's not going to move like Michael would, almost robotic in a sense, which was dope.
Yeah.
Not to take nothing away from that, but I want to make a little bit difference. And the character is going to look a little bit like the old vampire that they used on Salem's Lot that was a slash of Nosferatu, if you will.
Right.
I'm going to give him a dope, dope look. And I've gone to a couple of conventions where I kind of pitched the idea of a lot of makeup artists.
Yeah.
And I kind of told them what I wanted, how I kind of wanted to do it. They said, that'll be easy. They said, give me credit and I'll do it for free.
Okay.
So what I would like to try to do is shoot maybe like a 1 or 2 minute type of trailer or what they call a sizzle reel.
Right.
And try to shop it and see, you know, who bites.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting because it'd be like, I mean, the killer, depending on how you're going to evolve him or where he's from, if he's from this type of area, he may be able to fit right in. You know what I mean? It just depends, you know. And then it depends how people are going to handle him too, the victims. Are they going to, you know, want to fight him back, fire back, run?
I mean, towards the end, there is a posse that gets together, blacks and Latinos, that go looking for this guy.
Okay.
You know, and what's going to make it so dope, me being involved in music, is going to have a lot of 80s music. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like I have this one scene in the city of Carson. A concert took place in 1987 where NWA performed there. And there was only maybe like 200 people there. My buddy actually has the footage of that show.
Yeah.
Dre's never even seen this. Okay. And I told him, hey, man, would you be interested in allowing me to take a little snippet of that and recreate that scene to put that in the 80s movie where they're going to, a guy has a girlfriend and say, hey, I'm going to take you to a show, but I'm going to go check out this new group called NWA and kind of add somewhat the hip hop element to the movie to try to bring in somewhat of a, not only older crowd, but a younger crowd to a new movie. And so this is going to be blacks and Latinos. It's going to be filled with a bunch of dope 80s music that came out during those years.
Wow, man, I can really see that working. Hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah, and let me tell you something. This has been nice where I've just been laying there while I was editing my documentary thinking about this. And I'm constantly pitching these stories to my editor, you know, when we're editing and fixing the sound.
Yeah.
What do you think about this? Oh, that'll be dope. What do you think about this? There was the other day, because I already got the location where I want to shoot my first scene. I go, just bring your camera, man. I just want to show you where he's going to stand with the first scene. And he's like, all right, let's go, you know.
Yeah.
But now, I would definitely need a nice budget because there is a show that actually inspired me for its lighting. And it was, I don't know if you're a fan of Grimm.
No, but I've seen the trailers and stuff for it.
The very first episode of Grimm, they're outside at night and the lighting is incredible. I mean, it's almost like they got like yellow, blue, and red everywhere on the streets. And I want to use some of that for some of these night street scenes, you know. I need to make it very, very eye appealing.
Yeah.
You know, with music in a dope neighborhood. I mean, because, you know, I just really want to come with something different.
Yeah, man, that'd be great. And then have a nice score to it, too. Probably a good theme for that. Budget wise, what do you think you'd need?
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's the beauty of it, that I know so many people that are, I pitched this idea to, that are willing to work with me, no charge, just for the first shooting of the 1-2 minute sizzle reel.
Sizzle, yeah.
And then let's see where it lands, you know. I know a couple of people in the industry. We'll see how this documentary does. We're going to enter it into some film festivals. Mm-hmm. And if that opens up doors, then I have a better chance of possibly getting a better budget for it.
All right. I know when you got here, we discussed Jaws, and I think that was your favorite or one of your favorite movies.
That's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
Because one of my brothers brought home the book
of
Jaws, okay? And, of course, it had the shark with the woman swimming across. But I always wondered, why Jaws? Why not just the shark? You know, I didn't know I was a kid. And he said, well, you know, Jaws, you know, he chews on people. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. I go, have you seen the movie? And he goes, no, but me and my friend are going to go see. This is my older brother, Mario. Now, keep in mind, I have five brothers, four sisters. So he would always take me to the movie. So when I went to go see Jaws, man, it scared the hell out of me, man. First of all, just to hear, dun, 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 that right there,
Yeah.
And then there was a certain way the camera was with the water. You could almost see the water cover the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost made it feel like it was going above my eyes almost. It was just amazing. But I think the most scariest part was when Roy Schneider mm-hmm. Was feeding.
Yeah.
The shark comes up and he said, we're going to need a bigger boat.
Yep.
Boy, I tell you, man. But I will say this, that I was, I had popcorn and I had a soda watching the movie. And I remember I never ate anything. I was just captivated by this movie. And my brother at the end of the movie tells me, aren't you going to eat? And I said, I'm not really hungry anymore. But it just blew me away. So Jaws was definitely a big part of my life. Even to the point where when I would sit down to use the restroom, I would look down and see if there was anything coming up out of the water. I didn't want to take baths anymore. I showered. I didn't want to go to the beach anymore because it like traumatized me in so many ways, mm-hmm. but in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, the water it was a character itself in that because you can't see down into it, right?
No.
So that's another element, another layer. I don't know if you read the book. It's a little, there's a few changes in it.
My brother told me about that, but I never did.
Like Roy Scheider's wife in the book had an affair with Hooper.
Oh, wow.
Right? Because they knew each other from high school, right? Hmm. So when he came to the house, you know, when they called in Hooper to see what's going on with the shark, he walks into the house. Hey, how you been? You know, we went to high school together. And then they started meeting at restaurants and stuff. And very interesting, man. But Jaws, I got to go back last September to Martha's Vineyard, and I got to see where they filmed a lot of it. You know,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I did side-by-side shots of what it looks like then, what it looks like now. Roy Scheider's house is different. It's been remodeled, but it's still there. You know, it's still right there on the water, and people stop there all the time. You know, nerds like me, you know, and we'll go check it out. But that movie lives on forever. It still holds today. I mean, even though the shark looked a little cheesy on today's standards.
On today's, yes.
As a kid, you know, it was scary.
No, well, you know, it's funny because as a kid, I'm thinking to myself, I couldn't tell when it was real and when it was fake. Because they were saying that there was a real shark that they used. I think his name was Bruce. I'm not sure if that's even his real name. But in elementary school, that's what our favorite thing to draw back then was a shark.
Mm-hmm.
Like whenever the teacher would give us like our 15 minutes recess, I would be at the lunch benches drawing a shark, you know.
Yeah.
And they had a great cast, you know, Richard Dreyfuss.
Sure.
And they had Quint, which was one of my favorites.
Yeah, Robert Shaw. Yeah. He was badass.
Awesome, man. But when Roy Scheider shot the shark at the end mm-hmm. and blew his ass up, boy, I tell you what, man. I was like, I was thankful because I was like, I was just a kid watching that movie and I, please, somebody kill that damn shark.
Yep.
You know.
Exactly.
Shoot him in the eyes or something, mm-hmm. you know, but.
Yeah, yes. Bruce was the name of the shark, that mechanical shark. They used footage of, which you can tell now as an adult, where the real shark is. They use it in there on some of the underwater tank stuff. But that movie there, man, the troubles they went through shooting that with the water and the waves and the shark not working. I mean, what a mess.
Oh, man. You know, from the very first scene when that girl gets naked, runs into the water.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was like the first tugging of her underwater, and then she comes back up, and the way she breathes, it's almost like that.
Yep.
I was mm-hmm. like, "What the hell is that?" Like, it just blew me away because you didn't know what it was.
Right.
It scared you, but you didn't see it.
It's better that way, I think.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's
yes.
better to not know and let your imagination run. And Halloween did a great job of that too.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of less is more, that first scene there, Susan Backline, I think her name is. She's the stunt lady that was in that scene. They had that like harness on her.
Uh-huh.
And as the story goes, they were tugging it hard on her. So some of that breathing was attributed to real pain.
Was real.
Yeah. And they kept all that, you know.
That's awesome. I mean, that's dope that we can actually talk about this because I'll be honest with you, I don't get a chance to talk to many people about stuff like this. And a lot of that stuff is just hitting me. A lot of people just think it's all about hip hop, DJing, cutting and scratching. Mm-hmm. I love all of that. But this is also another side of me that I love. You know, put it this way. I can do film or do videos or do documentaries or be involved in stuff like this and never, ever go back to music.
Really?
I mean, music will always be intertwined with movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I can literally leave the studio and not look back and think twice and be involved in stuff like this for the rest of my life. Because this is another side of me that I love that's never really fully came out.
Yeah.
And to be able to be here and talk to you about it, boy, I'll tell you what, man, you made me one happy kid.
Yeah. You know, appreciate that, man.
On my birthday, I posted up a post that said, the first 50 years of childhood are the toughest.
That's right.
And it's true. So I'm 51, so I'm really 1 year old right now. So.
Yeah. I mean.
For my new chapter in life.
Okay. Yeah. So like these movies, yeah, like, you know, it brings us back to our childhood, man. You know, a lot of these older ones, you know, Aliens, Jaws, the Freddy Krueger's, Nightmare on Elm Street. I mean, those all are connections with who we were growing up. Yes. And I think that's why they'll always remain strong with us, you know, and keep going. A lot of the newer stuff, like The Conjuring.
Yes.
You know, I enjoyed those and Insidious. What did you think of some of the newer films?
The Conjuring, to me, I thought it was really, really awesome. I thought it was somewhat, maybe even a throwback, because I'm thinking to myself, I haven't seen such a good movie like this in such a long time. Mm-hmm. There's a certain scene when this woman walks in with her husband, and I forgot their name at the moment.
Okay.
If you remember, the lady went to go see their lecture, and then when they came back, please come to my house.
Right.
When the lady meets the whole family, and then she recounts that moment, she sees a dark shadow.
Right.
And back of all those kids, I will say this, that in my teenage years and in my 20s, I seen stuff like that. So when I saw that, I'm thinking, wow, they nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they nailed it. Mm-hmm. You know, I had shared with other people whenever I do get a chance to talk about stuff like this, that my family being from Mexico, it almost seems like every Mexican family has a devil story that they've seen somehow the devil or something spooky or something crazy like that
right.
in their life. So growing up, I was always told, you know, old folk tales, legends, and stuff like that. So, but as a kid, I literally saw something like that.
So being out on tour, or, you know, out of the country or out of state or anything that like that, anything kind of scary, paranormal, horror-related happened to you on the road?
Yes, yes. You know, it's weird because it was 1991. I was out with DJ Quick, Second to None, AMG, and High C, and we were on a EPMD tour.
Okay.
All through Texas. So we did like Beaumont, Texas, Houston, Texas, Dallas, Texas, all over Texas. So we were out on the road for, I want to say, almost a month. And it was my first time meeting the Ghetto Boys, and we met them backstage. We weren't performing with them, but they showed up. I met Bushwick Bill there, Scarface, and all those guys backstage, and it was called the Palladium in Houston, Texas. And I remember I was about 22 years old. And I'll be honest, I wanted to go out and get drunk. I never drank when I DJed. I never drank when we performed. I never drank when I'm in the studio or anything like that. But I just felt like I just want to go get a couple of 40s. Okay. So my manager, we go back to the hotel. And I tell one of my buddies that was on the road with us, I said, hey, man. Let's go get a couple of 40s and let's just go drive around or something like that. We're in Houston. Why not? We're going to leave tomorrow. So I said, all right. I remember I bought a King Cobra. And he was like, I don't want to drink. But he was eating chips. And we found a park where we parked. And it was completely dark. But I just figured, you know what? We couldn't find any girls. Let's just go drink, chill, listen to a little bit of music. And as we continued to talk, I remember, and this is no lie, straight ahead within the trees, not only was the park completely dark, but there was something there that was darker than the black of the park. And this thing literally looked like if it was walking in slow motion towards us. Like one step at a time, and then another step at a time. So the whole time I'm drinking, I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm seeing things. Okay? As long as he doesn't say nothing, I'm not going to say nothing. We'll leave it at that. He's not drinking. I'm drinking. I'm seeing things. And I keep looking at this thing, and this thing probably gets, it was almost like a gorilla-shaped man, if you will, walking. And I continue to look at this thing, and as he continues to walk forward, now he's about 10 feet away from the van, right in front of us. And all I heard was this guy's voice kind of crackle because he was so scared. And he said, Tone, man, what are you waiting for? And that's what he said. And I turned around. I go, you see it? He goes, it's standing right in front of us. So I turn on the light. I turn on the ignition, put it in reverse, and I just peeled the hell out. I took off, okay? And I told him, tell me what you saw. And he said, man, it was walking right towards us. It was dark. It was black. He says, it was like a man. It was something, man. He goes, I thought you saw it too. And I was like, I did. But I thought I was the only one drinking. So we drove back to the hotel. We're probably about 20 minutes away from the hotel. So we park. We're sitting right there. I don't even want to finish my beer. We're just kind of like bugging out, talking about this. So finally, the windows are being fogged up because we're in there breathing and we're drinking. Oh, I'm drinking, if you will. And before you know it, he turns around and looks at his window, and he said he saw somebody looking inside like this. And as he yelled, I turned around. I saw something run behind us. So what I did, I got out of the van and I ran in back of the van, and it was maybe about 2 o'clock in the morning.
This wasn't at the park anymore, right?
No, we went back to the hotel.
Right.
So whatever it was, it followed us. So I was like, what the hell was that? He goes, dude, it was standing right here. And it was looking in. He goes, I was looking at you and you were looking straight ahead. But I just turned around and I saw somebody looking at us. So I thought, well, let's get back in the van, bro. And, you know, what did it look like? He goes, I don't know, but it was completely dark. So now I'm looking in my rearview mirror and it's somewhat foggy, but I see somebody walking towards us once again. And I turned around and he walks to the left, so now to my side. So now I'm afraid to turn around, you know, to look at it. So as I turn around, there's nothing there. So I just said, look, dude, let's just grab our stuff and let's go back in our room. She said, all right. So the next day when we woke up, we told everybody that was on tour with us and they all laughed. They all thought it was hilarious. Oh, you guys must have been smoking some sherm. Sure, you guys went on, you know, whatever. But that was a real freaky story. I remember calling even my mother and telling her that. And she would always say, make sure you pray. Make sure you this. Because, again, every Latino family is superstition and they have their own spooky stories.
What do you think it could have been?
I don't know, man. But you know what? I will say this. One guy twisted my arm one time and told me, do you believe that there is evil? And I said, yes. Do you believe that there are angels and demons? And I just said, yes. Do you believe that there are actually evil spirits that could possess people? And I said, yeah, I truly believe that, because there's no other way to explain the things that I have seen. And I'll be honest with you, I've even seen them in recording studios. Those dark silhouette shadows. The best way that I can describe it was, if you've seen the movie Ghost, if you remember when one of those evil people died, those dark shadows came from the ground and they'll take them. These didn't make no noise, but many of them were of different shapes and sizes. Some were short, some were bigger. And it's weird, because I went to one of my friend's house years ago, and I spent the night there. I didn't want to come home. I just spent the night there. I lived maybe about 45 minutes away from his house, and I was kind of like a little buzz, and I didn't want to go home just yet. So I spent the night on his couch. And I'm waking up, and it's completely dark, but there's something standing on the door, right in front of the door. And it was taller than the door, and I remember seeing his arms and his legs like this, like, you're not getting in. You know, type of deal. And I just sat there, and I was just, like, looking, okay? So, I don't know why I did this. I rolled off the couch, and I slept on the floor, and I just covered myself. This was several years ago. But this thing was freaky, because I did feel an evil presence. For the first time now, I actually felt an evil presence. I'm laying there with my head covered in blankets. All of a sudden, I feel tiny little legs stepping on my legs. And I'm thinking, what the hell is that? So this little kid says, Daddy. So I look, and it's my friend's daughter. She must have thought that I was her dad sleeping in, I said, yeah. She goes, I'm afraid in my room. Can I sleep with you? And I said, yeah, hold on. So I called him. I said, Derek. So he comes out. Oh, what's going on, man? I said, hey, dude. So I explained to him the whole deal.
Right.
He said, what room? And I go, that room right there. And he said, okay. All right, cool, man. Later on, he tells me that him and his friend were doing some stuff in there. And his friend said, this can invite evil spirits. I'm just letting you know.
His friend told him that.
And I said, well, what did you guys do in there? And he said, well, he said, he read to me certain things from certain books. He would call them philosophers, but later on I found out it was the Satanic Bible from Anton LaVey. And he said that he would read to me certain things, and he was showing me how he levitates. And I said, so you actually saw him levitate? And he said, yeah, bro. And he goes, he showed me how to do it. But he did tell me that by doing certain things like that, you can't invite evil spirits. Up until that point, he said, I didn't notice anything. I go, what did you do with that? And he goes, right there in my daughter's room. She even felt it where she walked out. So I said, wow. Well, you're going to have to do something because I'm not staying, bro.
Yeah.
So, you know, I ended up leaving. So those were pretty much some of my scary moments. So seeing stuff like Conjuring, mm-hmm. seeing stuff like Insidious, a lot of that stuff is very, very familiar to me.
Okay.
You know.
Because you can kind of relate.
Yes, yes, for the stuff that I've seen. Now, can I explain it? No. But, you know, I seen it. Nevertheless.
What you described in the doorway, right? That was, yes. Remember in the first Insidious, yes. That demon standing next to the boy.
Yes.
And he kind of points, you know, his arm goes that way and he points towards the boy.
Exactly.
You know, that's exactly. What I pictured when you were describing that.
Yeah, and he had his arm, almost like you're not getting in.
Right.
You know, but the thing that scared me the most was her little feet.
Yeah.
You know, stepping over mine and then saying, Daddy. I mean, I was like, well, you know, what the hell is this? Because I'm covering my head. And then he goes, Daddy? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, can I sleep with you? I'm scared. And that was pretty freaky, you know. Okay.
Wow. You know, you mentioned Salem's Lot earlier. That was another one, man, when I was a kid. Yes. That scared me. You know, that was Stephen King. And I think that was like a three-hour TV event or whatever it was. But that, you know, that vampire,
yes.
Right? And yes. I remember even like... the guy that's sitting in the rocking chair, he's already turned.
Oh, man.
As a kid, you know, those thoughts, man, and those visions of that and those memories of that scared me, man. Like, remember he tried to kill the vampire with a stake and he raised up? Or what about the little boy above his friend's window, right, flying in?
Oh, man.
That shit scared me, man.
It really terrified me because he's knocking and saying, hey, let me in.
Yeah.
Let me in. And I'm thinking, no, hell no. You know, and he lets him in. Okay, the clouds, the music.
Yeah, man.
But I'll tell you one thing that from there that I really wanted to put into my film that some people may think is cheesy, some people may think is corny, but that part you mentioned it, when he's rocking in the chair and he opens his eyes and they're glowing.
Yep.
I haven't seen anything like that lately in movies. So I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to implement somehow something like that in my film.
Yeah.
You know? And I'll tell you one thing that really, really scared the hell out of me. And there was no movement. It was just a scene. If you remember, when he's digging the hole, or if you will, he's throwing the dirt at the funeral. Mm-hmm. But something tells him, jump into there, and he opens it, and there's that boy laying there like this. And it was an aerial view looking down. I thought, that's a great shot.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to use something like that. And then he wakes up and bites him, dude. I mean, that movie right there was, what to me, was amazing. I mean, I have it on Blu-ray. I have a collection of horror movies. But I thought that movie was awesome, man. I mean, there's so much that you could take from that movie. Another movie that I really liked that had to do with vampire was Fright Night.
Oh, yeah.
Fright Night was another dope movie. Humor in it, but it was somewhat serious. You know, but overall, it was just, you know, Peter Vincent, the famous vampire killer.
Yeah.
I didn't care so much for the new remake.
I didn't see the new one with Colin Farrell.
I would say it's worth a watch.
Okay.
It's I always like to say it's rentable or wait for it on video, even though nobody buys videos anymore.
Right.
It's DVDs, but it's worth a watch. Okay. I thought it was pretty cool. I bought it because I'm a Fright Night fan, but there's no comparison to the first one.
Did you see 30 Days of Night by any chance?
Yes.
I like that one. Did you like that one?
Yes. It's funny because one of my favorite quotes on there was "No God."
No God.
Yep. Right. That was really, really dope. That's another. I love vampire movies. So,
yeah.
So that one was another one that I do have, and I watch a lot.
You know, that's one there, and there's another. Well, way off topic here as far as movies and Friday. So the reason why I'm bringing up Friday is the concept, the simple. Simplicity of the concept, right? So you got in Friday, you know, three houses or whatever it is, boom, that's it. And that's another thing of 30 Days a Night, the concept of it, one little town, right?
That's it.
One small group of people, And the movie just was incredible. The concept was great. I saw the making of it, and they built that town and everything and made it into just like a small little, a little town. And these vampires come for 30 days or whatever, right? Because the sun doesn't come up. Mm-hmm. And that's the story.
That's the story.
You know? And the no God part, that, you know, that's a scene that just sticks out. That,
yeah.
When I think of that movie, I think of that. Because she was like, what? No, oh God, oh God. Mm-hmm. And he's just like...
Absolutely. That was really, really dope. I mean, like you said, the simplicity, because many times these people don't necessarily have to chase you. Like Michael Myers could be just standing across the street, and when he put the camera on, you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, what the hell is that?
That movie there is another example of what you said, the simplicity of it. You know, one little area. Now, the ending scene was filmed off of... Sunset and Orange Grove is the name of the street. That's the two houses at the very end. Everything else was Pasadena, you know. And you can go there now and stand by a lot of the famous hedge, you know, that Michael stood behind. That's still there. That guy that was
another
house.
Dope cool. scene, yeah. Classical yeah. scene.
Mm-hmm.
That was dope. My daughters, I took my daughters there last year, and my sister.
Oh, you took them out there?
Yeah, okay. And I said, I got to show you. You got to stand by there. And there's a guy there dressed like Michael Myers, and he takes pictures with people.
Yeah.
But she goes, why did you want to bring me here? You know I don't like this guy. And I was like, but baby, you got to understand, this was a part of my childhood.
Yeah.
So I share everything with them and everything that makes me, you know, because I want to teach my kids and spend time with my kids that I'm more than just hip-hop and DJing and scratching.
Right.
There's a lot more to me. Like, I also love a lot of reading. You know, I love reading a lot of ancient history.
Okay.
I love classical music. So it's just not just hip-hop. That's just one side, you know, of me. So.
Okay. What about one of my other favorites is Psycho?
Psycho.
Okay.
So The House, of course, Universal Studios. Yeah. I mean, I love that. And around Halloween time, they got a guy by the base motel that sits there with the knife and chases the trend, which is really, really dope.
Yeah. And that's another movie, too, is like, it brought, for back then, it came out in 1960, but it brought this just weird, well, I don't know if you call him a transvestite. I know they didn't want to use that word in the end of the movie there, but, you know, to dress like his mom.
Uh-huh.
And just start killing women, you know. It was just a trip, dude. You know,
right? Well, you know, and they got the right guy for that.
Yeah.
You know, today, I think some guys, when you watch them in movies, they're like, that guy shouldn't be playing that guy. Like they I don't know if he just had the hookup and he got a free ride or whatever. But some of these guys should not be playing some of these villains, if you will.
Right.
Silence of the Lambs was dope. Of course, that dude, the guy that hides his weenie between his legs.
Ted Levine, Buffalo Bill.
Buffalo Bill, that guy. God.
Buffalo Bill was crazy, right?
You know what's funny? Because when I still see that guy in movies, Buffalo Bill, I still can't get over it. He's Buffalo Bill. Like,
yep.
I'm like, you're still the same weenie from Silence of the Lambs. It's like, I wonder if he's a real weirdo in real life.
Yeah, you know, I saw the making of that, and he talked about how he got into that. That he read a lot of, like, case files on other killers and serial killer books, and he kind of made it his own, man. I mean, that part where he tucks his junk, man, that's crazy, man.
He nailed it.
Well, yeah.
He nailed it. I just, it's hard for me, you know how they say it's hard for you to unsee it?
Right.
It's hard for me to unsee it when that dude plays in other movies.
Yeah. And you can tell by his voice, but he's been in a lot of stuff. He was in Heat.
Mm-hmm.
He was in The Hills Have Eyes, Jurassic World. That second one.
And it's always that same voice, huh?
Yep. Always, man. Now, that movie, including the book, Silence of the Lambs, that was just kind of murky, man. It was like just it brought you into this other, like, mind state, man. Like, damn, there's people out there that do this type of shit.
Yes, know? It's almost like they have no feelings. They have no regard for a human life that they can torture people. It's almost like I seen the first Hostel.
Okay.
And I saw how people would pay just to torture someone, man.
Yeah.
And I remember one time I watched that with a couple of buddies of mine, and that's when I said, I would have no problem walking into a room and just wasting all those guys, you know?
Yeah.
On how, you know, they're doing such evil things to these people, you know, and they're getting off on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are freaky movies.
There's people out there that are like that, you know, a lot of the famous serial killers, Dennis Rader, the BTK guy. I mean, he would just go kill people, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he would get off on it, but he wouldn't necessarily rape them, but he would strangle them and then do weird things. and leave, like Ted Bundy.
Richard Ramirez.
Ramirez, man.
He was another guy, bro. Everybody, at least during that, the 80s, they all thought that they saw him at one point. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, that might be him. That might be him. But that guy was notorious, man. I'll tell you, switching gears up a little bit, another movie that had a huge impact and literally scared the hell out of me was Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes. Yep.
That, boy, I'll tell you. Now, and I remember being in Texas in 1991.
Okay.
Where I asked people, hey, man, do you guys know where that Texas Chainsaw Massacre house is at or whatever? Because I thought it was like actually a real house.
Yeah.
But later on, I found out it was a story of Ed Gein, if I'm correct.
Ed Gein, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, but they said, no. Well, Texas is huge. The biggest state in the United States. You know, I thought everything was kind of close, but no. But that's another movie that was... scary as hell, man.
Were you around L.A. during the Richard Ramirez time, or are you still traveling around? Or
no, I was there.
What do you remember about that time? You know, whatever your school memories are of, or what your family. What do you remember knowing about it, hearing about it?
Well, I kind of have some inside scoop stories because my older brother. His brother-in-law, if you will, his wife's brother,
okay,
was a police officer at that time.
Really?
And back then, they had a lot of freaks calling in, I killed him, I did this. So there were stuff that they released to the media and stuff that they didn't release to the media. And all those callers were just repeating what they read in the newspaper. They didn't repeat some of the inside scoop stuff mm-hmm. that he was actually doing. For an example... He said that there were things that he would do. He would gouge out their eyes and with their blood make certain pentagrams. That wasn't released to the media. Or he would write on the wall with their blood. A couple of times he would kill them, leave their body there, and make something to eat and mm-hmm. watch TV or something. And yeah. it was like nothing, you know. And they wouldn't release that to the media just right. yet. So the media would only get like... two people dead, somebody stabbed in the stomach,
right.
or whatever. So when, you know, and he was going everywhere. He just didn't stick in one place. He was going. Mm-hmm. I think that's what frightened everybody because nobody knew where he was going to be at next. But I will say this.
Yeah.
That the police somehow knew, and I knew this because of my brother's brother-in-law, if you will, that they had a pretty good idea that he was a Latino.
They just felt it?
Yeah, it was a hunch. Because just some of the places that he was going, they were asking people, you know, because they didn't have cameras everywhere like the way they have today. It was him. He was going to this dental place. He would go to this liquor store. And a lot of people started coming up where he was a Latino male. So all the descriptions that they were getting from these liquor stores, these places that he was going to,
yeah.
You know, for an example, it would be like if I had come to your liquor store and said, did anybody around this time, mm-hmm. around this a tall Latino Hispanic man, the next city, what about gas station? Yeah, tall Latino. So they started kind of like, we're getting more of this than of anything else. So I remember when he called my brother and my brother called my family.
He called your brother?
Yes. Not Richard Ramirez. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The police officer, his brother-in-law. And he said, we have a picture. We're about to release it on TV.
Yeah.
So me and my whole family were watching, you know, because they have somewhat of a sketch.
Right.
But this is the actual picture. And they showed it on TV and it was a Latino. They were pretty much right on. Now, nobody else knew, you know, that it was a Latino. But we had somewhat of the inside scoop because he was somewhat working on the case.
I went on they had a Richard Ramirez Night Stalker tour. Now, by no means do I condone any of this, but it's, you know, this stuff is, I don't know if you call it fascinating, but, you know, this is stuff that I read about, you know, and I went on a tour and it didn't take you to where he killed, you know, but it took you to the hotel and to that liquor store, probably the mm-hmm. one you're talking about. And there was a hotel near Skid Row that he used to frequent. And then we went to the house where they beat him up yeah. and arrested him. So that was a time. I remember I was young, you know, I don't know what year that was. Can't remember what year that was, but I remember way out in San Bernardino where I lived, I was afraid, you know, this is happening in L.A., you know.
Yeah, everybody was afraid. And I remember that day where my brother hung up the phone and he told my mom in Spanish, turn on the news. He said they were about to release his picture. And I remember, you know, five brothers, four sisters, all living in one house. And we all kind of looked at him and were like, okay. You know, back then we didn't have remotes. You had a, you know, and there it was. There was his picture.
I think they actually pulled him over at one point and didn't realize it. Pulled him over for something. And
I think they pulled him over twice.
Really?
Yeah, twice. And they let him go. So, well, I think one of them, I think he ran.
Yeah.
And then one of them, they ended up letting him go.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, those are you know, you kind of wonder, like, what would possess a person to do something like
that? Yeah, right?
You know? But when this guy started saying, Hell Satan, one of the boldest guys to ever say something like that in court.
Yeah.
This guy didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, I saw an interview with, if I'm correct, not Jeffrey Dahmer, but the guy that would actually have sex with dead women. He would kill them. And Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy.
Okay.
It was his last interview, and he wanted to give his interview to a Christian minister, Dr. James Dobson. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No.
It's available on YouTube.
It was Bundy, Ted Bundy?
Yes.
Okay.
And he wanted to, I don't know if it was a confession, but he was admitting to where all of this started.
Okay.
Like how it started. And, you know, according to him, whether it was all a bunch of BS or this was his way of somewhat making things right, I don't know. But he chose a Christian minister from Colorado, if I'm correct. And his minister is very, very, very famous. And he pretty much told them that it all started from soft porn, looking at magazines, from their videos.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I seen so much of it that eventually I wanted to do it. He said, and eventually I wanted to do more. He goes, and I noticed that the more and more and more I did, it was never filling me up. Like, he needed to do more and more. And the next one had to be better. And that's pretty much how he, if you will, confessed, or his interview went.
That's the movie that just came out with Zac Efron on Netflix last week. He plays him.
Oh, wow.
Ted Bundy.
I didn't know that.
He had the yellow bug, and he had a girlfriend at the time. He was going out and doing bad things, you know?
Yeah. Jeffrey Dahmer's the same thing. I saw an interview with him where he was just so cool, calm, and collected that the lady asked him, if we would have never caught you, do you think you would have continued? And he said, absolutely. He said that he was thankful that he was actually caught because he knew that it had to stop, but he couldn't stop. Mm-hmm. He said it was like an addiction. I couldn't stop. Son of Sam.
Yes.
He's another one that supposedly he was quoted for saying when they caught him that he was telling the police, thank you for catching him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
he said, yeah, something to that effect, and something to the effect of, like, you got me, or you finally got me. And that was a time, I was born in New York, and that was a time, well, it was before I was born, but my mom, you know, she was cutting her hair and dyeing her hair because his victims were certain colored hair.
Yeah.
And I read a few books on that case. This guy started out just kind of walking around, walking the streets, and then he would just pick random people. You know, mostly it would be couples making out in cars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the first two that got famous, the first two famous killings of his, because apparently he did it before that, he attacked some girl, but it was two women in a car.
Hmm.
And he killed one, wounded the other, and that was in the Bronx. But then he was everywhere, Queens.
Yeah.
You know, Brooklyn. I mean, he spread it all out. And
yeah. You know, it's funny because back to Halloween, the way Dr. Donald Pleasance, the way he would talk about Michael and his serious voice, and he was so sincere, it was almost like it was real. Like, And I've seen certain people, you know, doing documentaries that would talk about Ted Bundy or Jeffrey Dahmer. And it reminded me of, like, Donald Pleasance when he talked about Michael Myers. He was like, you know, when I looked at this guy was just pure evil. Like, he had no remorse. He had no regret. He had nothing. It was just like he was just empty, you know. That's why when I go back to little things like that, that why I like Halloween so much, because they had such a perfect cast to be able to get a doctor and to talk about Michael like that. Like,
yeah.
He made you believe that, you know, Michael was that evil.
Very passionate. In his, you know, him following Michael and studying him. Very passionate. He was actually, he was kind of scary too himself.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, you know, his face, his eyes, and just the way, like you said, he was, you know, I remember seeing him as a 6-year-old boy, you know. And anyways, we're going to close this out, man. I appreciate you coming way out here to Haddonfield, man.
you know, it's been my long life dream to come to Haddonfield, and I'm glad I finally did.
Yeah, man.
It was worth the drive. I loved every minute of it. I don't want it to stop, and maybe one day in the future I'll be back when I'm famous.
Yeah. Come on back. Open invite anytime.
Most definitely.
And we'll see each other again. Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much.